Here it is, the Electronic Engineering Podcast you've been waiting for. Howdy! Welcome to Fish Fry, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, as always, Amelia Dalton from EEJournal.com. And what the heck are we talking about today? Well, yes. Without an entertaining round of who's on first, I'll come out and say it. Ben Heck is here! Okay, I'm totally excited. Can you tell? If you don't know who Ben Heck is, well, then what the heck are you listening to this podcast for? Okay, no. Ben Heck of the Ben Heck Show. He's a hardware hacker. He's an artist. He's an all-around good guy. And he's here to talk with us about the next season of his super successful engineering television show and how he got into this wild and crazy EE business. Hi, Ben. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on.
First off, I want to say that I'm a big fan of your show. So how did you come up with the idea for the Ben Heck Show?
Well, first of all, it wasn't really entirely my idea. It was back in 2010, and I was approached by an ad agency, Silver Fox, I believe, that was working with Element 14, part of Newark, the electronic supply company. And the idea was they were just starting up Element 14, and they wanted a way to get people excited about the community, because it's all about community of engineers and whatnot, people helping each other out. So the premise was that they would do a technology show, basically to kind of get people excited about electronics. So I was approached by the ad agency. They're like, hey, Newark, Element 14 wants to do this show. Would you like to be involved? And I'm like, sure, I'd just try. So that was kind of, you know, where it started. And then as far as what the show was about, I always thought, you know, it'd be kind of cool if we, you know, built things. And I'd seen shows, you know, I'd watched Mythbusters a lot and was a big fan. But I always thought, like, you know, they're doing all this stuff, spending all this money just to blow something up or crash
right.
something. It's like, yeah, what if we, obviously we don't have that kind of budget, but what if we tried to make things more altruistic, like accessibility controllers and inventions and things that might be useful? So that was kind of the premise for what we would do on the show. We try to get community suggestions. So if someone's in the LMO4 community, they're like, hey, you should try this and this or this. And when we see a really cool suggestion, we try to do those on the show. So we take input for builds from pretty much anyone. But anyway, that's basically where the show came from.
That's great. Okay, Ben, give us the scoop on this upcoming season.
Well, the big thing we're doing is we are spending more hours per week. The staff that is local here in Madison, working more hours. Allison, the local producer, she's here more. I'm here more in the show capacity. So we're trying to make more detailed, more exciting builds with kind of more robust and deeper editing. So basically to kind of flesh out the show and help it improve. As far as the builds themselves, those are fairly the same. We're just trying to continually find new cool things to do. The first episode of season 4, we made an auto-strumming guitar, which was kind of complicated. But we're trying to bring in more help when we can, bring in additional help so we can accomplish cool builds in a reasonable amount of time, basically increase the man hours. Those are the big things we're doing. I mean, the format of the show has changed a little bit, the graphics and whatnot, and the music. We're editing more of it locally here so that we can have more control and consistency over what is displayed, since we're the boots on the ground here. So
right.
We tend to know exactly what everything means, and there's less is lost in translation. Our upcoming builds are hopefully there's some cool stuff that people will enjoy. And I want to be a little bit more aggressive. I try to, if we have more resources, I want to try to do a little bit better builds, but still we have to build things in a couple weeks' time or 2 weeks' time. So that's always something we have to be cognizant of.
Yes, definitely. So Ben, tell my audience a little bit about your background personally.
Yes. Well, I started as a graphic artist. I was not always into electronics.
Wow.
I was a graphic artist since I was 22, but I had always been interested in electronics. I always had taken things apart. At an early age, old radios and whatnot. So then many years later, I kind of got into, I was a graphic artist at this time, and I was hacking up old Atari video game systems, and this was around 2000. So I hacked them up, and I was like, I should make a portable version of this. So it was a real hack job. I mean, to open it up now was just embarrassing how badly I did it. But it looked really good because I was able to use my layout skills, mechanical skills, to make something that looked really nice. And I put that on the internet, and everyone got really excited about it, and I was surprised that that many people cared. Remember, this is long, long before the maker movement really got started. And we had the internet, but still it wasn't quite the same. Nobody knew what an Arduino was back then.
Right, right.
It was a different time. So then, I don't know, after a few years, I actually had a book deal, Wiley Publishing, to write a book about the subject of hacking your video game consoles and doing creative stuff. And I was like, well, this is probably a good time to change careers because I wasn't really super happy with the place I was at the time. So, yeah, I did that. And then since then, I really basically been working for myself ever since. And then in the last few years, working for Element 14 on the Ben Heck Show. Yeah. So I never really got back into my old line of work since the electronic stuff took over. But, you know, whatever works.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's all I have time for. Thank you so much for joining me today, Ben. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Next up, we're going in deep. UVM. What is it? Where can I learn more about it? Where can I buy some? Gotcha. That last one doesn't work. Anyway, today on Fish Fry, we have none other than Ray Salemi, who has a new book out that can help us learn UVM. Ray is also the author of the wildly popular FPGA Simulation, a complete step-by-step guide, and one of my personal favorites, Robot Haiku. Oh yeah. Ray wants us to understand why UVM is so cool, what it's all about, and why engineers make really good protagonists. Thank you so much for joining me today, Ray.
Hey, Amelia.
So, Ray, tell me more about this UVM primer book you wrote recently that's available now. What was your motivation to write this book?
Well, the UVM primer is an introduction to the UVM. And UVM, by the way, stands for the Universal Verification Methodology. And it's verification technology that the industry is moving to and actually accelerating in the way it's moving there. And I didn't see many books out there that were targeted at someone who had no experience with verification methodologies or even object-oriented programming with System Verilog. And I felt that it would be nice to have something that just took someone from the very beginning and then brought them all the way up to be able to use the UVM.
Gotcha. So, Ray, go into a little more depth about what my audience will learn when they read your book.
Well, what happens in the UVM primer is you start out with a basic test bench, and then we go step by step and convert that test bench into a UVM test bench. So first they would learn about object-oriented programming, how it relates to System Verilog, just the amount of object-oriented programming needed to use the UVM. And I use these little simple examples of it. I use lions as classes and chickens and cages for them and inheritance. So I try to make it all very concrete and a little bit fun. All of the examples are available online and can be downloaded and run. So as you're reading through the book, you can go over to your computer and actually run the simulation I ran when I made the figures. And then once folks have that really solid understanding of object-oriented programming, then we go on and show how that got used to create the UVM. And the challenge there was to present the material in a way that there were no gaps, that you didn't expect the reader to be able to jump over several concepts to understand something. Or there are cases where there's concepts that you need or seem to need two or three together to get them to work. So I spent a lot of time on the order of the concepts so that each one builds on the other, and none of them requires you to learn two or three things at the same time. So at the end of it, you know, you should be able to talk to someone about the UVM, and when they say, well, tell me what an agent is, or how do you do agents, you can actually have a conversation with them, know all of the terms and the buzzwords and all of the pieces of the UVM.
Very cool. So, Ray, I know you're also a mystery writer. Tell me about your book, Terminated, and when I can get my hands on a copy.
Okay, yeah, Terminated is a completely different line. I write it under the name Ray Daniel.
Actually. Okay.
And so if you went and looked for Ray Daniel Terminated, you'd find me again. And the book is just a classic mystery. It's the beginning of a series with a character named Tucker. Tucker is an engineer who gets caught up in fairly non-engineer kind of problems involving murder and crime and whatnot. In the case of the first Tucker book, Tucker had been working on a project with his wife, designing decryption software. And then one day he goes into his boss's office, and his boss fires him. He goes home to tell his wife, and his wife has been murdered in their kitchen. And now he's trying to figure out, 6 months later, how this all happened. It's a sort of a classic mystery, and I tried to capture that essence of what it's like to be an engineer faced with a really complex problem, and tried to share that feeling you get when you debug something and you say, aha, this is how it works. And so that's the genesis of Terminated.
Fantastic. I love it. So when is it going to be released?
August 8th. So it's available for pre-order now. And if you go to RayDanielMystery.com, you can pre-order it. but the launch date is August 8th.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for talking with me today, Ray. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
Also, if you want to download or buy a copy of the UVM Primer, a step-by-step introduction to the Universal Verification Methodology by Ray Salemi, or perhaps pre-order a copy of Terminated, check out the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page called Hackers, Makers, and Teachers. Hey, are you ready for a little news you may have missed? I am. Okay, so I wrote a joke. Here you go. A 3D printer walks into a bar. No, wait. It was a 3D printer, a priest, and a rabbi. No. Shoot. Never mind. Okay, yes, I love me some 3D printing. Still working on that MakerBot sponsorship for Fish Fry. Are you guys listening? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, what could be cooler than your own 3D printer? Which are selling for about $200 a piece these days, or low-end ones. Anyway, what could be cooler than that? A 3D printer that prints stuff we could actually use. Plastic is great and all, but isn't it time we stepped up things a notch? Well, a team from Michigan Technical University seems to think so as well. This team, headed up by Associate Professor Joshua Pierce, has a new open source 3D printer that prints in metal. Yes. And they want to make it a household name, or something close to that. Coming in at a mere $1,500, this prototype by Joshua's team at Michigan Technical University combines the coolness of an open source microcontroller with the power of a small commercial MIG welder. So far, unfortunately, this team and their metal printer have only been able to print one sprocket. I know, not revolutionary. Just yet. Did you catch that open source part? You too can help this 3D printer revolution on its way to a metal printing victory. Because Joshua Pierce and his team at Michigan Technical University have made everything required to build the printer, the detailed plans, the software, the firmware, all open source. You can download the goods, you can help them make this super cool idea more, how did they say it? Right. Make this 3D printer quickly evolve to a much more capable device. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Oh, yes. And they aren't really encouraging everybody to go out and build or even have one of these metal printers in their house. Make sure you have the safety gear and fire protection equipment handy. So, if you've got that fire extinguisher on your bench somewhere, I would strongly encourage you to check out the link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page called Hackers, Makers, and Teachers. All those open source plans are just waiting for you. Whether operating as a standalone board computer or with other boards, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about this week's nerdy giveaway is the BeagleBone Black, courtesy of Newark Element 14. The BeagleBone Black provides easy access to industry standard interfaces and a well-developed ecosystem of software and tools. Not only that, the original BeagleBone's Cape plug-in boards are also compatible with the BeagleBone Black, enabling easy integration with previous projects. This bad boy uses a low-cost Satara AM3358 ARM Cortex-A8 processor from Texas Instruments. So, you want to win one of these awesome BeagleBone Black kits for your very own? All you have to do is head on over to element14.com/fishfry, or you can click the link on this week's Fish Fryin' page that says, enter to win a BeagleBone Black, courtesy of Newark Element 14. It's really easy. You should go there now. Hey, just imagine if your Facebook newsfeed had a little EE journal sprinkled in. Wouldn't that be awesome? Yes, it would. You can like us at facebook.com/EEJournal. You can also check out our tweets at EEJournalTFM and join our circle on Google+. Oh yes, and by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. Well, that's all there is for this week's Fish Fry. Remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, including those open source plans I spoke of earlier, you can head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of December 6th, 2013, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.